Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. I appreciate you tuning in. Today on the show, I have Chase Chicos. He is a BJJ strength and conditioning performance coach in Southern California. Just an awesome guy. He has a very sad story though. A couple of weeks ago, he lost his seed phrase and was trying to change wallets and lost access to the stack of Bitcoin that he'd been accumulating for the last 4 years. But I really appreciate him being on the show, taking time to share his story and the takeaways and lessons that he wants other people to hear. I think you'll really enjoy this episode. Hey, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Chase here with me. Chase, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Hey, what's up, Mike? Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the conversation. I wish we'd made acquaintance over better news and a better story, but I think you've got a powerful one to tell. Before we get into everything that happened, for people who aren't familiar with the situation, let's just talk a little bit about your Bitcoin origin story. We were speaking beforehand offline about your enthusiasm for Bitcoin. Who orange-pilled you, and when did this all happen?
Okay, so in 2018, I met a guy, Danny, who is Capital Satoshi on X. We met in the gym. He was doing boxing with a friend of mine, very close friend of mine. Actually, I considered a guy a mentor, and he was a very good boxing coach. And Danny had just started boxing. And in 2019, he was like telling me, hey, already, like, I had just met the guy, and he's already, man, Bitcoin. He was always posting about it. But listen, like a lot of us, I heard about Bitcoin, like, probably, I want to say 2012, 2013. But listen, I was younger. I didn't really understand anything like that. I was never really like a big tech guy or anything like that. And still not. But like I said, in 2019, Danny was talking about it and kept posting about it. When COVID came around in 2020, I had got pretty like into looking into investments, because as a personal trainer, as a strength and conditioning coach, I run my own business. I'm a self-employed person. I don't have a retirement plan. I don't have a 401k. I have nothing like that. So, you know, I'm in my 30s and I'm like looking at like down the road. I don't want to just work for the rest of my life until I'm 70 years old out of necessity. I want to do it because I want to. And so I kind of started talking to Danny early in 2020 when COVID hit. Bitcoin at this time was around 2,800, maybe 3K. And he was like, I'm telling you, you need to get in now. I'm like, I don't know. Still kind of like on the ropes about it. I think October, November, I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to go for it. At this time, it was around 8,000 or 9,000. I don't remember exact numbers when I got in, but I remember it was like 8,000 or 9,000. I just put a little bit into it. I started building up over this time. He was like, look, real Bitcoiners put like $10 a day. So I was like, all right, cool. I started out putting $50 a week. I just put on one auto pay, $50 a week at this time. I make my money training general population and youth athletes, but I also work with, UFC fighters, you know, like in the UFC, not just a lot of people get a generic term for UFC, but MMA is the sport. UFC is the organization, like the highest organization. And when those guys fight, I get paid. So anytime they would pay me, I get a percentage of their purse. I would take those chunks of money because I don't use that money to live off of, right? I pay my bills with my general population and my youth athletes. So anytime those guys would pay me, I would take a percentage of that money or a large chunk of that money, depending on where I was at financially at the time. And I would invest that into Bitcoin. So those were my larger purchases that I would make on top of my dollar, my DCA. So I just started building up from there, from 2020 all the way up into this time. So it's been about 4 years consistent of, you know, boom, 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 boom. We're always buying. During this time, as we know, that was a full Bitcoin cycle. I kind of got in when the bull started in 2020. It had just kind of started going a little bit. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm going to get in. And immediately, you know, during this time, in 2021, I believe that's when we hit 69K, Right. So I was like, oh man, like my first year in this, look at how much this has grown already. As history has repeated itself, the ups and downs. But during this time, I never once thought about selling my Bitcoin. That's when it was all the way up at 69, all the way back down to 16. I never once thought about selling. And Danny was like, trust me, like this is what makes Bitcoiners. It's not only is it hard to keep your Bitcoin when it's peaking and it reaches its all-time high, but the ultimate test is when it goes down 80%, which is it happened. And it went all the way back down to 16, as we all know. And never once did I think about selling my coin. Never once did I doubt it. I was just all in. I was all about it. And as I said, that's my retirement plan. Bitcoin was my retirement plan. Bitcoin still is my retirement plan. I haven't lost any conviction in Bitcoin. Unfortunately, I just had to learn a lesson on storage and security. When I tell people the story, they're like, oh man, you're so dumb. Like, how can you not lose that? And before this happened to me, I never thought that something like that would happen to me. I would think the same thing. How dumb can you be to lose that piece of paper? How dumb can you be to lose that seed phrase? You never think like, oh, this can happen to me. It's just like, no, I would never lose that. And unfortunately, I find myself in a situation where I lost it. And it's a painful lesson. It definitely hurts because I spent the last 4 years of my life literally putting anything extra, everything I had in Bitcoin, besides my basic living necessities, besides food and home, everything else went into Bitcoin. Because I was that serious about like, man, I need, like I said, this is my retirement plan. This is my way of retiring younger. I don't want to be that 65-year-old guy in a gym having to train people still. I wanted to, be financially secure. And if I'm still in a gym at this point, it's because I want to be, not because I have to be.
I mean, I think that your journey sounds like, I think like a lot of people, and the conviction grows, and yeah, you have no intention of selling. Was there something that you remember, like reading, hearing, a meme you saw, a podcast you listened to, that clicked and gave you the conviction both to continue DCA and into Bitcoin, but when you had a, an inflow of a bigger inflow of cash, putting money into Bitcoin, and then to not sell it, in the troughs, like at 16K, was there something that just resonated so fundamentally with you that you were like, this is why I won't sell my Bitcoin? Or was it a book or a podcast or something else?
I think it was a lot of different things at once. Like I started following people that would speak about Bitcoin. Danny was a great resource to me. As I said, like anytime I ever had a question, I could just message him and he would respond to me immediately and just tell me like, hey, this is what's going on. Danny was always sending me resources like, hey, check out this book, check out this podcast, check out this, and when I look at like the world and the people involved in Bitcoin now, it gives you even like, it makes me more sure. When I see the biggest companies, the biggest hedge funds in the world, when I see the great minds at the top of Bitcoin, like Michael Saylor and other guys, like when they speak about it, I'm like, listen, these guys are way smarter than I am. I'm not some like super smart guy, like average intelligence. But when I see some of the smart people like him speaking about it and the conviction they have, even when they're buying at the top, I'm like, this thing isn't going away. This is the future. And I really believe that. I still believe that. And I just kind of trust that these guys that are putting billions of dollars into it know a lot more and understand these things a lot more than somebody like me. I'm just a regular guy. I'm like I said, I'm not some kind of genius. I didn't have like some kind of how can I say, like some kind of voice come to me and say, this is the way. It was just like a conglomerate of people that I think are really smart people. And when you start looking at all the facts of like what Bitcoin is and the way the world is heading as far as like digital, I think that's why it's the future. Like Bitcoin is perfect money. When you look at it, like it's scarce. It's capped at 21 million, and a lot of those coins are lost forever. So they estimate around 19 million possibly. You can't just create it anymore. Like once it gets to that number, that's it. And then also during this COVID time, we've seen that they would just hit the money printer button, and then boom, we have $2 trillion more dollars, $4 trillion, $6 trillion more dollars in circulation. And I'm like, that ain't right. Because if I had a savings account, you know, then my savings is just melting away when they hit that button. You know, yeah. The buying power of the dollar goes down significantly when they print $2 trillion. Because now if I had a 10K and I go to the store and everything is more expensive, my buying power goes down. So I was noticing that. And then when you just look at things through the Bitcoin standard over the years, even real estate, like, you know, in 2012, it was, or 2011, it was like 1 million Bitcoin to buy a house. And now it's like 5 to 10 Bitcoin and you can buy a $1 million home, you know? So when I was looking at those things, I'm like, obviously this thing isn't going away. Obviously these great minds out here are investing heavily in this thing. When you see BlackRock and all these other companies, I think I just saw BlackRock has more coins now than Satoshi. I know they just sold some the other day, but I think they have more coins now than Satoshi. Listen, BlackRock is the most powerful company on the globe, on this planet, and they're investing heavily into Bitcoin. Obviously this is not going away, and obviously these people know what they're doing with money. If they didn't, they wouldn't be where they are. And I kind of trust those trends more so than just me reading a book about it and believing it, you know. So that's one of the biggest things.
You hit on something that I think is so important. Like they're like just us everyday people. Like I had a guy out for HVAC maintenance at my house this morning, and he saw my Bitcoin sign on my wall. He's like, "Hey, can we talk for a minute?" And he starts talking about the deterioration of the middle class and how like he wants to get into Bitcoin. He understands that he's been listening to Saylor, and I'm like, man, like the awakening is happening because of like your example of you got $10,000 and then you go into a store and the purchasing power over the last couple of years has deteriorated to 8,000, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Your savings mm-hmm. account is melting. I feel like it's like people see where the puck's going, you know, to like, you know, use the old quote. And it's a matter of time before more people wake up to what the solution is, because more people have identified the problem. So you were stacking for about 4 years, very consistently, very diligently. And then a couple weeks ago, let's get it out of the way. Let's talk about the story. But I think there are a lot of lessons for people to learn. And we'll get to the good news at the end, and the community sort of rallying around you. But what happened? What were you doing, and how did you discover your issue that you faced a couple weeks ago?
Okay, so about 1 month, maybe 6 weeks ago, or something like that, I purchased a Jade wallet, and I had my Bitcoin. I think in 2021, I put it on the ledger. This is like pretty short after I started getting into Bitcoin. Danny told me, "Hey, if you're gonna get Bitcoin, you need to put it on a cold wallet." And I was kind of hesitant at first. I was like, "Oh, why can't I just leave it here?" He started telling me about, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know if you remember this time, but like for example, Robinhood was having issues with like freezing people's accounts and different stuff like that. And he was like, "Listen, it's not your Bitcoin if it's on a
exchange.
On an exchange. It's not yours. The only way your Bitcoin is truly yours is if you have it on a cold wallet." So I was like, okay, I'm gonna do it. I put it on a Ledger Nano S, and I had my seed words written down on a piece of paper. No problems for years. I had that piece of paper. I was all good. I want to say around March, I wrote it down on a new piece of paper. I'm saying that because I remember when I had just moved into this new apartment in February, I remember rewriting the words on a newer piece of paper because I had just moved, and I was like, okay, boom, I have my words here. About 6 weeks ago, maybe a month, 6 weeks ago. I bought that Jade and I set it up at the time, but I didn't transfer anything. Okay. 2 weeks ago, I was like, I'm going to transfer all my Ledger onto my Jade today. Cool. Let's do it. Okay. When you set up the Jade has a PIN code of 6 numbers. So it's 6. The Ledger is 8 numbers. Okay. So I'm unlocking my Ledger. It's on my computer, getting ready to transfer to the Jade. I enter 6 numbers. I press enter. One shot down, because obviously it's 8 numbers. That's not the right PIN code. And then I don't know what happened in my head. I don't know if it was like anxiety. Anytime I ever dealt with my wallet, I was always a little nervous. I made 2 transfers to my wallet before. One was 0.42. The other one was 0.46, for a total of 0.88 that I had in my wallet. I've only done that twice. And in those same times, like at first I would send like 10 or 20 just to make sure that it was going there. Okay, I can see it. Boom, now we're going to send all of it. Okay, other than that, I never accessed my wallet in that 4 years. 2 times, 4 years. Very unfamiliar with it. So anytime I dealt with it, even when I was sending it to the wallet, I was always like kind of just nervous. This is a lot of money for me. It's not like this is just a little bit of money. I'm like, what if it just disappears? What if it doesn't show up? And during this time, when I was entering the code, I don't know why my mind just drew a blank. Sorry. I enter the 8 code, whatever, wrong again. And I'm like, oh no, like it's okay. Again, wrong. And then it factory reset on me. And I'm thinking, okay, in 10, 20 minutes, just like my phone, if I get the passcode wrong too many times, I'm fine. 20 minutes passes, nothing comes up. It says, I need my recovery phrase. So I call Danny. I'm like, hey, or I message Danny, hey, call me right now. And he calls me. He's like, what's going on? I'm like, dude, I think I just like messed up. I don't know what happened. I guessed my code 3 times. And he's like, you got to find your seed phrase. You got to find it. Okay. So I started looking. This is on a Friday. This is actually 2 weeks to today. Today is Friday. 2 weeks from today. And I started looking around the house. I can't find it in any of the places that I thought I would have hidden it. It's okay. I'm kind of panicked out. I'm like every second, I'm like, okay, checking in this place, checking in this place, checking in this place. My girlfriend gets home that day. And I'm like, hey, this is what's going on. I can't find this paper. This is my life savings on this thing. She knew that I was into Bitcoin, but she just doesn't understand Bitcoin. For her, it's like, oh, that's like the fake money or something like this. And I'm like, no, this is the perfect money. You don't know. And she was like, yeah, whatever. I'm like, no, but seriously, I lost this paper. We need to find it. Okay, well, I don't work on Sunday. You don't work on Sunday. We'll search the entire house. Perfect. Saturday comes around and I'm still like, I can't get this off of my mind. I'm like, I got to find this thing. I'm looking by myself in all these different places in the house. I live in a 2-bedroom apartment. It's 1,000 square feet. It's not like some big mansion that I could have just, no. So I'm looking around everywhere. But Saturday, I don't find anything. Sunday together, we're looking. We got the house. I don't find it. Okay. I don't find it. That's when it really, really, really started to hit me hard, where I was like, I lost it. It's gone. And I don't, the only thing I can think is that it can have got thrown away. Maybe when she or somebody else was cleaning the house, we paid somebody to clean the house a couple of times. Or maybe she might've thrown it away on accident, just not knowing. It was written on a piece of notebook paper. It doesn't look like a significant, super important piece of paper. It's not like a document that I had that was all official or anything like that. And that was another lesson that I learned, like, you know, it cannot be just an insignificant piece of paper when it holds so much significance to me. So after that, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, even to this day, when I think about it, you know, it's not a nice feeling, because we talked a little bit before, it's not that it affects my everyday life. This is something that affects my future life. I never think about selling my Bitcoin. Even if it was worth $100 million, I still wouldn't think about selling my Bitcoin. But my future financial security was relying upon that. And so this is like not affecting day-to-day life today. This is affecting 10, 15, 20 years from now life. And when I think about that, that even kind of freaks me out a little bit more. Even now, I'm like, oh my gosh, like I don't have that backup plan. I don't have that retirement. I don't have that safety valve that I was putting the last 4 years of my life into. So that's kind of like the hardest part about it.
Man. So how were like those days following when you sort of realized, at least for now, it's not popping up. And man, I hope for you it does at some point in just the most mysterious way. But like, what's been sort of your mental state and frame of mind? Is your conviction still high? Are you just going back to stacking, distracted throughout the day? Like where are you at right now?
Well, first off, I made that video on X, and it kind of like got a big reception from the Bitcoin community, and people have been generous and kind enough to like help get me started back on my way. And that wasn't something that I expected. I just kind of wanted to get that stuff off my chest to some people who understood what was going on. Because when I tell my girl about it, all she sees is like how much money it was worth right now. It's not that she sees like what Bitcoin meant to us. And I just wanted to talk to some people that like understood what Bitcoin is and like the severity of the loss for us. It's not like a dollar amount, it's our Bitcoin.
That
whole first week, I was set on, oh, I didn't say this part. So I had a picture in my phone, and Danny always told me don't do this. So I know he's going to be like, oh, you should have done that anyway. But I had it in a hidden folder, right? So I had a picture. I had my notebook paper somewhere at the house, and I had the picture on my phone. In August, I deleted all the hidden folder. Gone. Deleted it from my deleted files. Also gone. And my first thought was, okay, I can't find this paper. Maybe I can get it back on my phone. So I talked to Apple support. I talked to two different attorneys, because sometimes these attorneys have like private investigators where they can pull up like deleted stuff on people's phones and they can use that in court and stuff. I talked to two different attorneys that gave me their private investigators numbers and people they work with that do data recovery on people's phones. And they told me, you know, Apple does a good job, I guess, of security, of not letting people's, not storing people's info that has been deleted after 30 days. So I talked to Apple support. I talked to two different attorneys and talked to their people that were trying to help me recover the data, and it's just gone. So that I kind of gave up hope there, but that was my hope still. Like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, that whole first week, I spent like trying to, I'm going to get this data back. I bought a $60 one where they sold me on it. I was desperate and it didn't work. They didn't recover anything that wasn't already on my phone. So I wasted $60 there. But that whole first week was pretty rough, and I still had like a lot of hope. I was like, oh, come on, we're going to figure it out. I'm going to find it. I'm going to figure out how to get this picture back. In my mind, the picture was a higher percentage than the paper. Although I still have some hope that maybe one day when we're moving out and like boxing everything up, maybe I stumble upon that paper. And you know, that's best case scenario at this point, where I think, you know, I can do a pay it forward of all everything that has been donated to me, and I can, you know, I would love nothing more than to like pay all everything that's been donated to me back to people, or pay it forward to someone else who's going through things, or just multiple people, however that comes. That would be the best case scenario. I've also looked into like, which this scares me because I don't like people get their stuff stolen, but a lot of people keep tagging Joe Grand, and I've watched some of his YouTube videos and stuff where this guy like is able to recover people's Bitcoin for him. But yeah, it's just the first couple of days were hopeless, man. Like I was like, like lost all hope. Like I just didn't have that same optimism for life that I normally do. I'm a personal trainer, strength and conditioning coach. And I think one of the things that makes me a great coach is my optimism toward life, my energy. I have a, you know, I'm a pretty positive person. I'm always have a good outlook on life. I'm always bringing the energy. And those, that first week, I didn't have it. It was kind of like taken out of me, you know, the fight was kind of taken out of me a little bit and I was feeling real down about it. And we're to the point where even my clients were like, hey, what's wrong? And I would just tell them, I'm like, hey, this is what happened. I lost everything. And I'm kind of, you know, like not optimistic about my financial future, which, you know, before I was like, yeah, I'm like talking to people. I'm like, yeah, Bitcoin's at 100,000. We're going to go to 10 million. I'm like pumped on it. You know, like I went from like being on top of the world to like, now I'm down in the dumps in a matter of hours, you know, like, It was even now when I think about it, I'm like, damn, like this sucks. But listen, if there's one thing that I've learned about myself over the years, it's this. I've had money before and I've lost it all. I've had, you know, a lot of things in my life where I've lost it. And you know, I've been knocked down. I slipped, I fell 100 times in life, but I get up 101 and this one's going to be no different. This one hurts a little more just because I had so much invested in it and you know, the value is much more than other things in life. But, you know, here's the thing. If I just stay down in the dumps about it and I just kind of stay salty about it, it really does nothing for me in the end of the day. And I just got to kind of pick myself up and keep moving forward and think about what's next, not what passed, you know? So kind of my attitude moving forward is pick yourself up and you know, what's next, not this is what happened.
Man, I mean, that's a great attitude to have. And one that I would like to think I would have in a similar situation, but it's the kind of thing you have to endure to know the type of person you are. So hats off to you. Speaking of, you know, my hope has been, and it seems to be heading this way, that the community's really rallied around you and that you don't have to do this all alone. Could you maybe just talk about a bit about the video that you made, what the response was, you know, who is reaching out to you? What's been the support that you've gained?
Yeah. So, I made the video and you know, like I said, I just wanted to talk to people about like what happened and kind of get this off my chest to people who understood. I did not expect at all for I think it's at like 1.8 million views. I did not expect for that to happen at all. And to be honest, in the video, I wasn't asking people for donations. I don't want to be that guy. Like I have a hard time asking for help with anything in life, let alone asking people that I don't know for money. Like that was like something that I just didn't want to do. It's not who I am. But also I was in a place to where if people were asking for my address, that I wasn't in a place to deny it. And listen, like Adam Back was commenting on my, on this video, like, Danny's I'm just talking to him casually. Danny's like, dude, do you know who that is? I was like, what? He was like, just watch this video. And he was like, bro, this guy is mentioned in the white papers. And I'm like, wow, that's incredible, you know? But I was just talking to him casually, like he's just another guy. Listen, I had a lot of messages coming in, a lot of comments, and I wanted to respond to everybody. But it was hard to get back to everybody in those first couple of days. Peter McCormick is another guy. And then Danny's like, dude, this guy has the biggest podcast in all of the Bitcoin community. Like, do you understand? Like, who do you, I'm like, sorry, I didn't know. But that to me started hitting. I'm like, the community has really, really rallied behind here. And that was one thing that I can take from this situation. I met a guy like Rick who connected us. Man, Rick has been incredible. And before that, he didn't, like, we didn't know each other. Rick's like complete stranger. And this guy's willing to do all these things to help me. Like, man, it's just been incredible. Like I, you know, sometimes I think if you just pay attention to what's going on in the world, or what's going on in the world. When you look at X or whatever, you think like terrible things only, but it's not that. Like, there's a lot of good people out there, and this situation made me realize that more than anything. Like, there's some awesome people out there, good people, and I think overall humanity is that. Like, there's good people and a lot of good things going on in the world. We just don't put the microscope on those good things all the time. And I think if there's anything that can come from my situation, it's that first off, it's bringing the awareness to, you know, protecting those seed words. And listen, nobody will think it will happen to them until it does. So make sure you're proactive in safeguarding that. And another thing that we can take from it is like the power in numbers, man. Like, people, you know, when you're authentic and you're a good person, which I believe I'm a good person. And that's what I told one of the guys at my gym. I said, his name is Karif. He's the owner of the gym that I sublease space out of. I was like, Karif, I thought I paid all my karmas back. And he was like, listen, brother, you have good karma coming to you. You definitely have good karma coming to you. You're a good guy. And I was like, yeah, I thought so too. It's like, why is this happening to me? You know, like, as soon as I kind of reframed it from that victim mentality of like, why me? And started getting my perspective back into, you know, like, hey, you know, without adversity, there's no resilience. And without fear, there's no courage. And started getting my mindset back of like, normally who I am and what makes me as a person, then it kind of started changing in my mind, trying to look at the positive and things. And again, I'm an optimistic person. I cannot let this thing that happened to me change that. Like, that's what makes me who I am, I believe. So, you know, it's just kind of like reframing things in your mind of like, hey, all the network I've made out of this, all the generosity from people makes me see people in a different light. Not that I thought people were bad, but it just sends you a reminder of like, hey man, people help each other and there's a lot of good people out there. So just remember that.
Yeah, I think one of the coolest things about the Bitcoin community is if you go on X, I mean, we are just beating the hell out of each other on like you pick a topic, you know, yeah. I mean, you know, ossification versus changes to the code. I mean, ordinals, like it's just nonstop, you know, incessant bickering. And I think much of the time, it's important to have those debates and for it to be in a public forum where people can weigh in and sort of have their ideas changed and shaped. But yeah, it's like there's a sense of community that I don't think is common everywhere. And in Bitcoin, like we sensed an opportunity just as a large group of people to step in and help one of ours, you know. And, you know, I imagine you being probably part of a tight knit community and MMA and in training, you probably like that's probably not a foreign concept to you, but it's cool to see like this digital global community come together for a common good. But I don't know if you had any comment on that, because I do want to get to your career and you tell me a little bit more about the fun stuff.
Yeah, but like yeah, you never. Okay, here's the thing. I think this is like a big thing, because just simply by us being Bitcoiners, by us believing in this thing, I believe that we share so much common personality traits. Like, when you first get in Bitcoin, you got to be a risk taker, because you might not know everything about Bitcoin. You're just kind of taking a swing at it. You're just getting in there. Now I think the risk has gone down a little bit, but especially if you're one of the early adopters, you're like, you know, you're a wild dude to get a Bitcoin. You're a great, you got to be wild, man. Like, nobody knew what was like. And then once you start learning about it, you're like, no, you got to be crazy not to get into Bitcoin. But I think that's one of the things right there. Like, we already share that, you know, you're an independent free thinker, because the whole world is telling you that that's not going to work, or that doesn't make sense. But as I said, as you get into Bitcoin, you start to look at them like, you guys don't understand. But just like the common personality traits, I think already we're connected on so many different things that it's easy to kind of rally around each other or form that community. And there's so many people, like, Bitcoin is not just a US thing. Bitcoin is a global thing. Kind of like you said, the MMA community, you know, in America, people play football and baseball, but in the world, people play soccer. I guess they would say the real football, but we American football here. But it's not the same, because when you can relate with people in different countries on common things, that kind of makes the community a little bit tighter, in my opinion. Like, I train people from all over the world. They don't understand American football at all. They're like, oh, that's nonsense. They just don't get it. But here it's like, you know, people love it, and people all kind of, it just doesn't bring the whole world. What I'm trying to say is it just doesn't bring the whole world in a common place. But Bitcoin is a whole world. It's a global thing. We could all relate to each other on that, that's pretty awesome. There's not too many things in the world where, you know, we can all rally around one thing and kind of be in that place.
Yeah. And to think it's a global community coming together around, you know, a common good. And there are people across borders everywhere who are sending you some sats and support without anyone's permission, no fear of censorship. And they know that this is one of our guys, and let's help them out here. And we have the ability to do that without going through a bank, without, dealing with tax implications. Like, I'm just sending the guy some sats. So it's a pretty amazing thing, man. Why don't we just talk for a bit about your career? So you're a personal trainer, strength and conditioning. I'd love to hear, I mean, we got to dive into UFC and some of that training. Why don't you tell me what it is you do specifically, and let's just kind of take the conversation there for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. So off air, we kind of talked about what I do. I'm a personal trainer, strength and conditioning coach. I pay my bills and eat off of my general population and youth athletes. I'm more known for on social media and whatnot, for training MMA athletes and jiu-jitsu athletes, combat sports athletes. I trained some of the top fighters in the UFC. I've trained guys like Marvin Vettori, who fought for a UFC title. I still work with Marvin to this day. I train other top 10 guys, Giga Chikadze. That's what I'm known for. In 2021, actually, I was nominated for the MMA Strength Conditioning Coach of the Year. That's kind of like what I'm known for on like Instagram and whatnot. So I make my money generally training regular guys, hobbyists, and youth athletes. But as I was telling you earlier, I pay my bills with that money. Whatever little extra I have, you know, I invest weekly into Bitcoin. And then when those guys would pay me, because I get a percent of their purse, I would make large purchases of Bitcoin. That's kind of what I would do. That's kind of my strategy, my stacking strategy was, okay, whenever I get large chunks of money that I'm not relying to live on, then I'm going to just buy Bitcoin, take 50%, X percent of that money and invest in the Bitcoin on top of my DCAing that I'm doing already. And yeah, so that's kind of been my strategy going for this for the last 4 years. And I don't plan on stopping that actually moving into the future. I'm still going to DCA, and any large chunks of money I get, I'm still going to try to get to that original goal of a whole coin, one coin. That's been my goal from the get-go, and it's my goal now.
You're going to make it. And hopefully the community gets behind you and helps you get there faster. But based on hearing you talk, I have no doubt. So in terms of your work, so when you talk about like you do strength and conditioning for like the general population, are you working effectively as just like a personal trainer, weightlifting, cardio, like that sort of like basic stuff? And then like the UFC and like youth sports is like a separate discipline that you're instructing on?
When I train general population, I just want people to get moving and get healthy. Different people have different goals. Some people want to get stronger. Some people want to add muscle. Some people want to lose weight. And we know, I talk to them and build a plan around what they want to do. And then with my ideology on training, we get into it. With the youth athletes, I won't even limit it to the youth athletes. I have some adults that are like myself. We're hobbyists. We want to go train jiu-jitsu or We want to feel good when we go play in our adult basketball league or softball league or whatever it may be, or golf swing or whatever it may be, that I want to remain athletic. And I'm a big believer in, like, everyone's an athlete. It's just after high school, most people stop feeding into that inner athlete. And my goal is to keep you feeling athletic for your whole life. I don't think it has to stop after high school. I don't think that there's, like, a time limit on that. On, like, you know, you can always be the best athlete you can be for as long as you live. I think it would be awesome to be 80 years old and still be able to run marathons like I see people on social media doing. Now, when I train youth athletes, obviously things are a little different, because I work with kids that are 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, all the way up. And it just depends. Like, I try to meet them where they're at. You know, like, you got a group of 6, 10-year-old kids in there. You know, you got to do some fun stuff, and then you got to get them to kind of enjoy the lifting stuff, because let's be honest, we have attention, like 10-year-old boys, you get them just lifting weights, they're going to get a little bit bored. So you got to figure out ways to incorporate some games or, you know, get them pumped about getting jacked, you know, like, yeah. You got to make them think like, yeah, we're going to get strong. You know, like, I've never met a kid. When I ask him, hey, do you want to get strong? I never met a kid say, no, I don't want to be strong. I never once has that happened. So my goal is to get them to kind of like fall in love with the weight room and build healthy habits that they can take with them for the rest of their lives. Now, when I work with UFC athletes, obviously there's bigger implications. These guys are getting ready to go fight in a cage. So mentality changes and keeping them healthy and listen, there's a lot riding on the road, like there's a lot riding on a line here. If they go in there and they're just not in shape and they're not physically prepared to fight, then I take that on me. If a guy gasses out in a fight, or a guy just looks like he's getting overpowered, it's never happened, but I would take that as I messed up my job. Now in MMA, there's so many factors. There's wrestling, there's striking, there's jiu-jitsu. And, you know, sometimes technical skills some fighters are going to have better technical skills than others, especially in some disciplines, as I just said, in all the different disciplines, boxing, kickboxing, Muay Thai, whatever it may be. And I got to understand that a fight is multifaceted. There's not just one way to win a fight, and not always the bigger physical guy is going to win, but a lot of times the technical guy. So I also understand my place in this world of, hey, I'm just a small piece to this puzzle. I'm going to get the guy as strong, fast, powerful, and conditioned as possible. And hopefully his technical skills with that combination of the physical can be the better person in the fight that night. So I understand that I'm just a small piece in this puzzle of the MMA fighter. I think some strength and conditioning coaches would like to think that, or even general population, you know, you look at a guy who's big, strong, and jacked, and you're like, oh, he's going to kill everybody. But that, if you ever watch fights, that's not how it goes. Technique, fight IQ, and different things, that stuff is actually more important than the physical attributes. But if you don't have any of the physical attributes, if you get tired fast, even if you know a lot and you're very smart and you have a lot of technique, if you don't have the endurance or the strength to do the techniques, then it's not going to be as effective. So I think blending those together, and, you know, that's what makes a complete fighter.
Yeah, man, it's a brutal sport, but it's I mean, it's a blast to watch. And I think what you just hit on is something most people, and I'm not like a big MMA guy. I enjoy watching it when I can catch it. But how many things have to come together? Because, like, have you ever seen there's like a meme? It's like a picture of, I don't know, like some professional football player, and he's like, you know, shirt off, jacked, and then next to like a picture of an MMA fighter, doesn't look as jacked or whatever. And it's like, most people don't realize that the guy on the right would kill the guy on the left. And it's like, it's because he knows so much more, and he's, you know, honed, you know, crafted, you know, these techniques over years and years and years. And it's something I don't think most people appreciate, the nuance to fighting in that sort of environment. You know, I mean, I understand it conceptually, but I can't even imagine what you're putting them through, what all of their, you know, coaches in these individual disciplines are putting them through. It's got to be just wild.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a brown belt in jiu-jitsu, probably getting my black belt soon. But I'm one of the few guys that I go train with those guys. So some of the guys, like actually all of the guys that I train, I'll train with them. It's fun. We have a blast. Like I train with some of the, I also train some of the best jiu-jitsu athletes in the world. A guy I have is a black belt world champion. He's one of the top guys in the world. I mean, don't get me wrong. He smashes me, but like, it's not, I'm not easy work for anybody. And, I got MMA fighters that, sometimes in like a grapple, I don't want to punch with those guys. I'm not going to lie. I don't, 35 years old. I'm not getting punched and kicked in the face. I'll wrestle with you and grapple with you. And it's fun. Like I do well. I'm no easy work for anybody, but the gym I work at, for example, it's owned by an NFL player. And a lot of NFL guys come in the off season and stuff like that. And they all have a ton of respect for the MMA fighters because they know, like some, you know what I mean? Like, like even a guy like smaller, he's like, oh yeah, some of these big jacked NFL dudes, they're big dudes. But it's funny because I've had like big offensive linemen or big linebackers, 270-pound dudes. And he was like, man, I was drinking at a bar or something, and I seen this guy walk in and cauliflower ears with a crooked nose. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm not messing with that guy. You know something
Yeah, you got to look for the
that
telltale signs, man.
I don't.
That's funny.
It's just funny to hear like football players, man, alpha males, they are freak athletes. But at the end of the day, like there's just stuff you don't know. And that's the beautiful thing about martial arts is like, man, you don't have to be like some like crazy freak athlete. It's just like you learn the technique and you learn the skills and you have the endurance for it. Anybody can learn the skills, anybody, literally anybody. And it's cool because that gives me a confidence in my everyday life. Like, dude, I know that I can pretty much handle myself against anybody in the world besides a top UFC fighter. And that's a pretty cool feel. It's like a superpower, man. It really is. Like I really feel like when I'm at the grocery store and if anybody wants to go crazy on some on grandma over here, like hey, I can handle that for
Yeah, that's a
her.
powerful set of skills to have, man.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we've been going for a little while now. I want to wrap up with, I mean, and first of all, for anyone listening to this, I think it'll come out after the first of the year, but I know that you're going to be working with the Bitcoin Way. We're going to get you set up in proper 100% self custody, and just make it happen, get you back on your feet. I'm going to also ask our editor to throw up a QR code for anyone who wants to send you some sats. I guess, yeah, maybe we just round for home. So the question that I ask everyone at the end of every podcast, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, but what is an unpopular opinion that you hold? And I always say that you get bonus points if it's unpopular, even amongst Bitcoiners. So it can be, and I'll just tell you, think for a minute, but I'll say it doesn't have to be about Bitcoin. It can be, it often is. But like Saifedean, I had Saifedean Ammous, author of the Bitcoin Standard on, and he said he hates movies. So like it doesn't have to be Bitcoin related.
Let's say unpopular opinion. That's a good one. Dang, you got me there. All right, Mike. Okay, let me think. Give me one
Yeah, no,
second.
you go on.
Damn, I don't know. I'm trying to think. I want to relate it to like something health-wise because I have all these strong opinions on health and like movement. I get.
Why don't you give a strong opinion? Is there like one thing I actually was thinking about asking you about, but didn't want to detour us too much, was like your thoughts on diet? Because like like in Bitcoin, you got tons of carnivores and people who are
Yeah,
like,
no, those guys have been following me, and I don't want to offend them. I just th this is definitely, listen, I'm a big carb guy.
Okay.
I
What kind of carbs?
oatmeal and fruit. Like I eat oatmeal every morning for breakfast. That's a good one, actually. Unpopular opinion, because I see oatmeal getting brutalized online now. Guys like Paul Saladino and a Asprey and all this stuff like that. Like they all shit on oatmeal, but I eat oatmeal every single morning. Blueberries, strawberries, banana. Every single morning, I put a scoop of protein in there, and that's my breakfast every single morning. I do not villainize carbs, especially in like the combat sports community. Man, like everything we do is fueled from carbs because it's very high intensity. And once you start learning how the body works, we have what's called glycolytic energy system. And glycolytic, okay, glyco comes from glucose, right? Lytic means the breakdown of glucose, and that energy system is fueled straight off of carbs. So if you're not getting carbs, you're not going to have the same output. And hey, don't get me wrong, I love Joe Rogan's podcast too, but I think that's one thing that I agree with, or that I disagree with Joe on all the time. Now, I do think if you're just a regular guy who's not putting in, you know, crazy hard work in the gym or something like that, and you sit in the office for most of your day, then probably limiting your carbs a little bit is probably a good thing. It's not going to be bad for you. But I think if you are somebody who wants to train hard and train at your best, that you need to eat a lot of carbs. I eat carbs every meal. I never leave it out. I'm not a big believer in the carnivore thing, although I have seen some things that say for like people with diabetes or different health conditions that maybe it can be beneficial for them. I'm just not that guy who's going to preach to anybody that they should be doing a carnivore diet, just because I just don't think it's first off sustainable long term, and second off, I don't see any problem in some fruit and like a sweet potato. Like I feel great when I eat that stuff. I just don't think there's anything wrong with it. And I've even seen Saladino like, oatmeal is peasant food. And I'm like, dude, they were feeding the gladiators during this time, oatmeal and peasant food. So I'm going to eat what the warriors eat.
Must have worked. I love it. You'll make some people mad with that.
The kings and the rich people were all, and the elites were all fat and unhealthy, and the gladiators and the ones fighting in the wars that everybody else was watching, those were the guys that were eating the peasant food. So just remember that when you try to hit me with that analogy.
well said. So I got to ask, off the top of your head, do you know, I imagine you're training harder than the average person. Like I work out, you know, 5 days a week, but probably not at the intensity that you're doing. Do you have like a breakdown of your macro ratio that you, off the top of your head, or do you track that? Do you track it, or do you just kind of know intuitively at this point?
Well, I was going to say, so, early on I was tracking, mm-hmm. And then to be honest, I eat the same, probably 10 things most of the time. I will say that during the holiday season, you know, right now I'm not like so strict on it where I'm like, no, I can't have that cookie. You know, like people, I think, get an idea of, you know, people who are fit and in shape or like professionals in this industry that are like, you know, we're some like strict disciplinarian who doesn't, you know, who doesn't enjoy their life because we're so strict on the diet. And for me, that's just not the case. Like I said, I want something that I can be sustainable with. When I think of diet, I don't even like the word diet. It's a lifestyle for me. I work out every day. I nourish my body every single day. And if I want to have a cookie or a ice cream, you know, once or twice a week or during the holidays when, you know, like I ate all the food my mom cooked the other day. I'm not worried about that because I spend 90% of my time, 80% of my time making sure that I give myself the proper nutrition and I'm working out hard. So, I think adopting it as a lifestyle and stop looking at it like, hey, this is my diet, or like, this is what I want to do for the next month. It's just like, no, man, listen, how about you just get down to basics and get that being a habit, you know, get in the gym at least 3 days a week, try to do one time a week of some cardio. I know it sucks and people don't like it, but try to make it a sport that you enjoy. That's what I always say too. Like, how about you take up boxing? Like, just go hit the bag for 30 minutes and tell me that's not a hard workout. Or if you like playing basketball.
You get disconnected there for a second. I can still hear you. Did your headphones go out?
I think they might have died.
Okay, no, you're good. I think
these are old.
no worries. I can still hear you. I think on your computer speaker, so you're good.
Yeah. So that's why what I'm saying is, you know, like make it a lifestyle change. You know, make it a habit. Now, if I don't work out for 2 days in a row, I don't feel good about myself. Especially like, man, going through what I just went through, the only thing I had to keep me sane and to get me feeling better was to go train jiu-jitsu. And I know jiu-jitsu is not for everybody, but man, like, I think everybody can train jiu-jitsu, right? Some people won't like it, but everybody can do it. And that was one of the things that actually got my mindset changing. Is I told you, I think when we were off air, when I was talking to the guys about what just happened to me, and then I was like, you know what? I'm going to pick myself back up from this. So I think for most people, getting to the gym 3 days a week and then finding an activity or a hobby that they enjoy that's active. I think it can be hiking. I go hiking. I have a dog. We go hiking a couple times a week even. So yeah, I think everybody, listen, I'm a big health guy because I think health is wealth. You know, like, it's one thing if you have 100 Bitcoin and you have all this money, but it doesn't matter at the end of the day if you're too sick to do anything with it. So I think health is my number one priority. Financial security was my second, but you know, even that, like, you know, everybody can make money, everybody can buy Bitcoin, but not everybody can be healthy. And they rely on pills and medications and stuff like that. So I think, you know, taking that initiative and really, really getting yourself together there is one of the more things that I would recommend to everybody. I don't see anybody on the planet who can't do with some walking or something like that. That stuff is always number one for me.
I love it, man. I think that's a good place to wrap up. Why don't you give a handoff? Where can people find you on Twitter? Do you have a website? Anywhere else you might direct people to?
Yeah. So on X,
yeah.
I am Chase Yo Dreams 247. On Instagram, it's Chase Your Dreams 247. Yeah. And you guys can find me there. And Mike, I just want to say, thank you for what you've done for me and giving me the opportunity to talk to people. And, you know, I thank Rick for connecting us. And it means a lot to me, man. Like, you guys didn't have to do anything for me. I wasn't expecting anything from anybody. And I won't even say that I deserve any of it. But if people can honestly learn from what has happened for me, if one person can learn, hey, and goes and checks their seed words and goes and checks that their recovery is all good, then I think that, you know, my whole message has been a success. And that's the biggest thing. I feel like my calling, in addition to the regular work I do, I think my calling is to bring awareness to the fact of, don't let what happened to me happen to you. And again, if I can save any of you out there from having to deal with this, then I'm more than happy to do it. So, Thank you, guys.
Man. Well, love it. I'm glad we've been in touch and appreciate you. I mean, 2 weeks later to be talking on camera, sharing this with the world. Can't thank you enough, man. It's an honor. Mm-hmm. All right, brother.
Thank you, Mike.
Take care. You have a good one.
All right, brother. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Really, really appreciate Chase being so vulnerable and taking time to share everything that happened. And if there's anything you can do to support him, please do so. I'm going to put up a QR code here so you can send him some sats, get him back on his feet and help him out. Of course, if you like this channel, if you've been listening for a while, do me a favor, like, subscribe, share it with someone who you think might be interested. We'd really appreciate any support for the channel. And of course, if you need help with proper Bitcoin self-custody, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free 30-minute consultation with a member of our team. We would love to chat with you. We also help with online privacy phones, Plan B residencies, everything you need to be a self-sovereign individual. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. And as always, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.